beef.
What is up, guys? Welcome to episode number 166 of Beef's Beef. I got a good episode with for you guys today. Look at I'm stuttering. I haven't done an episode in more like a week or something. But it's a fun episode. You see the new set? Let me know what you guys think. If you're not watching on YouTube, you should subscribe to me on YouTube. I'm trying to get up to 100 followers on there so I can change the URL. But before we get into today's episode, which is going to be a good one, I got to talk about my sponsors. First sponsor is Crystal Lackey at Stockton Mortgage. Hit Crystal up for any home loan needs, any refinancing needs, anything that goes along with the mortgage process. Hit up my friend Crystal. You can get in touch with her at 502-615-0743. Again, it's Crystal Lackey at Stockton Mortgage, 502-615-0743. Stockton Mortgage is an equal housing lender, MLS number 8259, Crystal Lackey, MLS number 1735979. Secondly, Delium Clothing. You can follow them on Facebook, Delium, B-D-E-L-L-I-O-M. Again, it's Delium, pronounced Del-E-M, B-D-E-L-L-I-O-M. Delium Clothing on Facebook, at Delium Clothing on Instagram. Delium is men's and women's minimalistic brand that focuses on modern aesthetic and quality. Everything comes pre-shrunk. You can find his men's line in downtown New Albany at Hems Gentleman Boutique. Get down there, get you some stuff. All of his stuff is so dope. He posted a picture yesterday of him. I don't even know what the term is. I guess sewing a pair of pants or designing a pair of pants yesterday. I thought they were so dope. Get down there, check out his men's line at Hems Gentleman Boutique, because, I mean, his stuff is so dope. And then last but not least, Mike and Cheese. Hit up Mike and Cheese. They do free delivery in the Southern Indiana and Louisville area. It's a minimum of $15. All trays start at $10. They just added a new Greg's Mac, which I believe is jalapeno and cheddar. I can't remember exactly what it is, but you got to try the Beef's Beef Pizza Mac. Everything he has is fantastic, but make sure you hit him up. Call him at 502. I got to get his number. I thought I had his number here. I apologize. 502-548-6845. Mike and Cheese. Get the Beef's Beef Pizza Mac. He sets up in Charlestown usually every week. But hit him up for delivery. Hit him up to cater one of your events or something. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. Hit him up. Get the Beef's Beef Pizza Mac. Let him know I sent you and enjoy. Today's episode, if you couldn't tell by the sign here, boom, new sign. Got the new poster. Got everything. You can finally see the shoes here. Look at that. I'm sorry. Everything is new here on the set. It's not new. Everything is new for you guys seeing on the set. I hope you guys like what it looks like. Hopefully you like what it sounds like if you're just listening to the audio, however you listen to this, watch it, whatever, I appreciate it. But today's episode is with a returning guest, Bryant Northern. This will be his third time on here. We talk about some fantastic stuff that I think you guys will enjoy. Let us know in the comments what you guys think. Shoot me a message. Let me know if you disagree with me or him or however you see it. Let us know. Just let me know you're listening. All right, guys, enjoy. All right, Bryant, thanks for joining me again tonight, man.
Hey, what's up, Beef? How you doing?
I might have to start making you a co-host or something, man. It's your third time being on here.
I love it, man. I wish we could do more stuff. We just got to find stuff that we need to talk about that the audience wants to hear. But I would love to join the show anytime.
Absolutely. So Bryant and I are in contact all the time. You know, he's keeping up with me with my podcast. I'm keeping up with this training. And, you know, we'll get in the messenger and we'll start going back and forth about different stuff, about current NBA things, about different things. And he shot me a message last week and was like, hey, you know, we need to get another episode going. You know, these are kind of the topics. And that's what I always challenge people to do. I didn't tell you this, but I have people all the time saying, hey, you need to have me on your podcast. And my first question back to them is,
what are we going to talk about?
Exactly. You come to me. You did it before. The second time I had you on, you're like, hey, we should debate Jordan, LeBron, and Kobe. I said, all right, let's do it. And I came to your house. We recorded it again. That was in the early days. And then this one, you gave me like 10 different things. I was like, I can pick four or five different topics out of that. But people come to me and they're like, hey, I should be on the podcast, but they don't ever bring me anything to talk about. I'm like, I'm already carrying the heavy work here. You got to give me something to at least that you want to talk about. So Bryant, for those of you who don't know, this is Bryant Northern, former U of L basketball player, current trainer. Like I said, we'll talk about that later. I have some questions for him about that, but he brought up some great questions to me. And I think it's something that both of us can talk about a lot. The first question he asked me, and I'll let you start on this, but you asked me, in this upcoming season, what is this U of L basketball team missing? And I'll let you go on that first, and I'll get my thoughts after.
Well, now that that DJ and Carlique are leaving, the correct answer is they're missing everything. We saw that we are not really good unless we have an elite point guard. If Carlique wasn't playing well, if he wasn't playing at all, we had like a 40-point loss to Wisconsin. This team needs a leader. It needs a point guard. It needs a scorer. It needs someone who can handle the ball and distribute. And he was that guy. Maybe the best point guard we've had in 4 or 5 years, maybe 5 or 6. All ACC guy. He could be a late second round draft pick or a guy that goes undrafted that plays his way into a team. If he's 2 or 3 inches taller or more athletic, he could be a mid second round pick or early second round pick. But you know, 6'1", 6'2" guys who don't jump out of the gym, don't have long wingspans, they're not sexy to NBA scouts. But as in terms of being an efficient college basketball player, man, he was really, really tough. And now that he's gone and DJ's gone, this team really needs everything. On paper, Samuel Williamson is our best player. He was an All-American. He was a high-level recruit. He has still yet proven that he can be consistent and be a guy who can lead this team. And we've seen glimpses, but he hasn't proven it enough. So at this stage, man, we need a point guard. We need a scorer. We need a big who can play with his back to the basket. I mean, we need shooters. This team is not a team that's built to make a run for the tournament again. This is not a team that's ready to jump in the top 25 or make some noise. This team really needs everything. It's young. There's a lot of question marks here. I don't know what to expect from this team, but I have high hopes as a Louisville fan and a former player.
Well, now, the answer might be on the way. I don't know how much you've been keeping up with the Marcus Carr recruitment. Marcus Carr, the grad transfer point guard from Minnesota, is basically down to Louisville in Texas.
I love Carr.
Yeah, Marcus Carr is a fantastic scorer, great ball handler, averaged 19-5-5 last year from Minnesota, and pulled his name out of the draft last week and cut it to 4. Everyone's saying it's just Louisville and Texas left, though. He's currently on a visit to Texas. He is scheduled to visit Louisville later this week. So that right there could be another guy. I mean, you got to think Carlique coming into Louisville last year was a good player coming from Radford. You bring in Carlique, he's the runner up for ACC player of the year. And I don't think anyone's going to argue that Marcus Carr is a better player coming in than Carlique Jones was last year.
Yes. Now, will he play at the level that Carlique played at? We don't know. The exactly. Big Ten is different than the ACC, but he definitely has more hype and more buzz coming in. So, you know, if he can play like he played for Minnesota last year, he could come in and fill that role and be just as good or even better.
Absolutely. Now, Louisville brings in L. Ellis, top JUCO guy. They bring in Noah Locke from Florida and Jared West from Marshall. Both of those guys are over 40% three-point shooters. L. Ellis will – I mean, unless something crazy happens, he's going to start whether Louisville gets Marcus Carr or not. You bring back Malik. Again, Malik's got to stay healthy. If Malik stays healthy and you can put Withers at the 4, I really like the lineup of if we can get Carr. Even if we don't get Carr, I think the lineup's going to be West, Ellis, Williamson, Withers, and Williams, which that brings Mike James off the bench, who's a freshman that I think is going to play a lot better than what people think. You have other guys,
what about JJ Davis? Trainer. Davis started last year. What do you think happens to Davis? What does that move him to?
See, I think Davis, honestly, is a big energy guy coming off the bench because he's not going to start over Williamson. I think when we saw Malik Williams play last year and you had Withers at the 4, Withers absolutely killed Notre Dame. Yeah, I think he had 16-12 or something in that game, and then Malik got hurt again in the next game against Duke. Withers' set position should be the 4. And then you put Williams at the 5, and because that also lets Williams play in his original position, which is the 3. And I thought he at the end of the year last year, Samuel played very good. Again, you said his consistency, and I totally agree. You can't just play half the season that well and then expect to just be handed over the keys and say, you're our guy?
You know, the Samuel kid was intriguing when he came in. He got compared to Francisco Garcia. The word, the buzz was one and done.
Yeah.
A lot of hype. He's coming in now to his junior year. And the NBA is starting to escape him a little bit. I mean, this is a guy who, is he really a pro? Is he really a first-round pick? This is his last year to kind of prove that. The NBA scouts do not like all four-year guys. True. You look at guys through the years, Denzel Valentine and other guys. You know, sometimes you stay all 4 years, and the NBA scouts, they push you to second round, and they start taking those young guys because it's a potential thing, right? The NBA drafts off potential. This is kind of his last year to showcase that he's really that guy. He had a lot of hype, and we've seen glimpses, but he hasn't really lived up to it. And I just need to see more from him. But I don't think new guys coming in, there's too many question marks. Can they really play? Can Carr, will we get Carr? Can he play in the ACC with the same intensity and passion, skill level, percentages and numbers that he had with the Big Ten? I don't know. I like the pieces. I don't need All-Americans at every position. I don't need pros at every position. This isn't UK. This isn't Duke. We can win with good, solid role players. But my problem is I tend to look at some of these pieces and I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know how good these guys really are. And I think we overachieved last year. There was a time we were competing to win the ACC, and then all of a sudden a loss here, a loss there kind of falls apart. And then you kind of look at the team and you're like, man, look what all we're missing. And they fooled us for a while. We were tricked because we looked like a top 10 team. We looked like a top 15 team. And then as it all comes out, we didn't even make the tournament. Whether you think we got snubbed or not, this team was missing scoring. It was missing shooters. It was missing consistency. We were missing a better big. We were missing bigger bigs. We were, you know, it's just college basketball was tricky last year. We got kind of caught in the pandemic shuffle, missing games and whatnot. But I think overall, it's going to come down to an elite point guard or a point guard who can lead and run the show. And then we need someone who can put the ball in the hole.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to decide whether Louisville's legit, if this is a ranked team, if this is a tournament level team. You know, forget rankings. I should probably shouldn't have said that. Is this a team can play in the postseason? You know, absolutely. As fans, I'm sure the AD, you know, we need to make a postseason run. We need to get into the NCAA tournament. We need to win a game. We need to win two games. You know, Coach Mack has a lot to prove here. And to kind of transition into that, I still think there's a lot of question marks around, is he really that guy? I think if people say no, they're probably being unfair. And I think if you say yes, then you're probably, you know, you just really like him and want him to get there. But we don't know if he's really the guy for the future. He's the guy right now, and that's okay. But I think we need to see this year and next year are going to tell us, hey, is this a guy who 10 years from now is going to be coaching our program?
So something that I was listening to Louisville Sports Live today on the way to Walmart to get some stuff. And there was a stat on there, and I was like, I got to write that down because we're talking about, is Mac the guy? What's the future of Louisville basketball? Mac gets a lot of criticism. Some of it is warranted. Some of it, I think, isn't. There's a lot of stuff that was – there's a lot of baggage he had to deal with coming into this program with stuff that he had nothing to do with. And anyone that is a Louisville basketball fan or outside can agree with that. You had the Adidas stuff happening. You had the Katina Powell stuff that was still over our head with the Adidas stuff. So this is all stuff that he's stepping into. Granted, he knew he was stepping into it, so it's not like we can just give him a pass fully. So I want to go off of what you just said. We need to win one or two games. I want to ask you a question. In Patino's 16 years, how many times did Louisville make it to the second weekend of the tournament?
You want me to make a guess because I don't know the correct answer.
Yeah, make a guess.
I would say 8 of the 16. I'm going to say half. He won at least a game in the tournament. Sweet 16.
No, so Sweet 16 or further. This one I meant. Second weekend of the tournament.
I would say 6.
You were really close. It's right in between both those numbers. It was 7 times. So okay. I think we would both agree. Patino is a top 5 coach, maybe top 3 coach of all time. Whether we like the guy or not, he's an absolute great X's and O's coach. He does more with less talent than a lot of coaches have ever done. And he wins everywhere he goes. He takes Iona to the tournament after sitting out a long pause for COVID this year. But that's not the question. The question is Mac the guy? And I would agree with what you just said. It's still a little early on to see. I like the things that I've seen. I like the fact that going into this year, he has said, hey, I don't care that these two guys are my friends. I'm letting go of these guys. I have to make a change. Our offense has got to change. He brings in Ross McMaines, a young up-and-coming guy that has done a lot in the game in New Zealand, admits that his offense needs to be changed, said that he would have done it last year with Carl Eakin and David, but we had too many injuries or we have too many COVID pauses to be able to do that because you already have your two top guys playing pretty much 40 minutes a game. So, again, I like where it's going, but I'm with you on – I'm not going to say, yes, he's for sure a Hall of Fame guy. He's going to be the next Patino or Crum. But I'm also not going to say, no, he's not the guy he needs to go.
Well, Beef, let's say this. He did get rid of two coaches. He fired two coaches and said, hey, I got to get some new guys in. Some things got to change. But if we really want to be honest, that was a move that I'm sure the AD and the powers to be said, hey, something's got to change. If he did that organically, if he did that naturally and said, look, guys, my staff isn't cutting it, and that's him being, you know, accountable and fired two staff members, that's one thing. Yeah. But let's be honest, there were some strings that were pulled. The powers to be probably put pressure on him and said, look, you have to do better. We have to win. We got to recruit better. The staff isn't going to cut it. If you want to keep your job, bring in some new guys. And that's what I really think happened. You know, I've talked to former players and different people. We all believe that's what happened. And that's how it works in this business, is someone put the pressure on him, most likely the AD, and they said, you got to make some changes. And it is what it is. He has to keep his job. And he had to do what he had to do. He gets rid of two coaches. You know, Khalil Fennell moves up, and then I'm not sure who else he brought in, but
Ross McMaines, young 31-year-old guy from New Zealand. Actually, he heard about Ross McMaines, he said, in a Zoom thing with Jeff Van Gundy. Jeff Van Gundy was raving about him and told everybody to go watch videos about his offense, and that's why he brought him in.
Well, that's smart. That's smart, and that's strategic. But, you know, and the coaching changes I'm fine with, but the thing for me is, would he have done this on his own? Would he have made these moves? Did he see that there needed to be a change? Or is he only doing it because his hand was forced? Because let's be honest, he was good friends with these guys. And I don't think that if he had not been pressured or made to do it, we would have came back with the same offense, the same coaching staff, and kind of been, you know, like Arden Sandy, repeating the same things, expecting different results. So I'm glad the changes were made. I hate to see guys lose their job, but we have to move. We have to be progressive. And we have to understand that in this business, you have to be willing to change staffs. You have to be willing to change the offense, change the defense, and get new players in.
I mean, I can see what you're saying, and I mean, both of us really don't know how it went.
I have no idea. So yeah,
that's the same way I am. I have no idea. You could be right. I could be right. We don't know. It's kind of tough for me to think that he would do that, and then have to go tell Tyree that. I don't really want to go into the Dino Gaudio thing, but for him to have to go tell Gaudio that, or Tyree, that stuff that Gaudio was saying, and eventually get him charged with all that stuff. I don't know. I just, you could see that Mac wasn't happy last year with how the team was going. You could tell he wasn't happy when they didn't make the tournament. He did the Zoom press conference at the end of the season, which again, that doesn't matter whether he's firing or whether he's not renewing contracts of his friends or not. But he wasn't happy with the way things were going. He could feel the pressure. He knows what Louisville basketball is because his wife is from here. So he knows the pressures that, and the, you know, the tradition that Louisville basketball is. And that's kind of where I looked at it. But transitioning from that, it was, is Mac the guy, and what's the future of Louisville basketball?
The future of Louisville basketball. I think we've kind of, now that, you know, you had Coach Crum, there were some ups and downs. Patino, he's always been a winner. And if you get rid of the scandals and the different allegations, the program was always moving in the right direction. We've had some players. And even when we didn't have the elite players, Coach Patino got the most out of his teams. Coach Mack inherited really an ugly situation. He did inherit some good players. And now we get to see him play with his guys. All of Patino's players are gone. These are his guys. But I'm going to tell you this much. Head coaches in this business, I don't care if it's Coach K, Izzo, Coach Patino, they're really only as good as their assistant coaches. And what I mean by that is this. Yes, they're the motor, they're the engine. But if you go back and look at guys like Patino, he had Tubby Smith, Billy Donovan, Mick Cronin, Kevin Willard, Coach Davenport, guys like that through the years. He's had a lot of great assistant coaches. And if you look at these other coaches, they're not just a one-man crew. Their assistant coaches are brilliant. They hire great guys who developed and coach and teach and recruit. You know, they're not on every visit. They're not at every high school gym recruiting guys. They don't draw up every play. And look, they can only scout so many games. There's so many hours in a day. You know, and coaches, they some guys scout and some guys are doing player development. You got a big man coach. So Coach Mack's success will be predicated on if he hires the right guys. You're only going to be as good sometimes as your talent and also as good as your staff. So having a good staff is very important. And when you go back and look at Patino, I can't think of another great coach who's had better or more assistant coaches than Coach Patino. And a part of his success has been Billy Donovan, Tubby Smith, and those guys learned from him. And they also brought a lot to the table, which is why they were so successful after. They could recruit, they could teach, they could coach. You know, these guys are brilliant basketball minds. So the future of Louisville basketball, the future of Chris Mack, it's going to be predicated on, can you get players and do you have the right staff with you?
I would absolutely agree with you on Patino having the greatest coaching tree ever. You even missed two guys that were
fantastic. The greatest ever.
Billy Donovan and Jim O'Brien are two guys that run him as well. And that's
– No, you're right, right.
And, like, so I 1,000% agree with you. I don't think it's close. He has the best coaching tree of all time in college basketball history. I want to take it a little bit in a different direction and just talk about some of the guys that we're actually looking at. I think the thing that is going to help Louisville out the most is the – crop of talent that is coming up in the city for the next couple of years. Next year, you have in the 2023 class, you have two guys in the city of Louisville.
Caleb Glenn
at Mayo, and then you have George Washington III at Christian Academy. Both of those kids are four-star players when you look at ESPN and 247. And then you have Reed Shepherd, the son of Jeff Shepherd, which every UK fan or any basketball fan that is above the age of 30 is going to know who Jeff Shepherd is. Star for the UK championship teams. His parents apparently are not huge fans of Cal. Again, that could always change. They're obviously fans of UK because both Jeff and his wife both went to UK. They both played basketball for UK. Reed Shepherd is a walking bucket, but Caleb Glenn is the one that we have to get in this class. Caleb Glenn is a 6'6", 210, 220 guy that can shoot from the outside. He can bang on the inside. To me, he's a better version of Dwayne Sutton coming out of high school. He's definitely
more athletic than Sutton.
Yes.
I don't remember Sutton as a senior, but when he came to Louisville, he was kind of a bruiser, kind of that Draymond Green kind of vibe. He can guard the other team's best player. He could guard wings. He can guard guards. Overachiever. You know, he kind of reminds me of like a Draymond Green, just works really, really hard, overachieved, found a way into the pros. You know, he's going to make some money and have a career just by working really, really hard and being a hustle guy. Who can guard, defend, and even put it in the hole. Caleb, to me, I don't know. I don't know if he's a program changer. And I love Caleb. You know, his dad was at Louisville the same time I was there. Is he an elite athlete? Yeah, I remember him from Louisville Magic dunking the ball in games as a seventh grader. My son Brandon was playing on the eighth grade team. And Caleb would get fast breaks. I'm talking 12, 13 years old, and he would dunk the ball in games. And he didn't need a lot of room. He could dunk on you. And here he is a couple of years later, he's added some ball handling and some shooting. And I think, like, once again, everybody's not going to get a Zion or a John Morant or guys like that who are one and done and they're just elite guys who can change your program. But I think when you collectively get four or five guys who are glue guys, rebounders, shooters, and you piece it all together, you come up with a good team. But I think guys like Caleb make sense.
Yeah.
He has the length. He has the size.
And he's from the city.
He's from the city, and you need to get those guys. Even though Archie Miller got fired, I mean, he had four of the last five Mr. Basketballs in Indiana.
Yeah.
You know, so I think Coach Mack needs – and Louisville, you know, Louisville has elite talent, but I think overall it's really rare that they get the McDonald's All-Americans. When was – think of in the city outside, you know, D'Angelo Russell left and Rajon Rondo went to Oak Hill. But when was the last time the city of Louisville really had guys stay in the city and they were five-star guys? So when you do get those four-star, five-star guys, you got to get them. You can't lose them to Arizona State or IU.
I feel like the highest rated guys had to be Spalding and Snyder. Neither one of those guys were McDonald's guys. Mm-hmm. So, but those are the highest rated guys in the last, 20 years or more.
Once again, none of those guys are one and done. None of those guys are five stars, but when you get a guy, you know, Caleb's top 50, you got to get him.
Yeah.
So,
that's three guys there that are from the state that I think Louisville has a legitimate shot at getting. George Washington is actually, he lives in Louisville. He just moved here from Texas a few years ago. He's actually the highest rated guy of all three of them. And for What's me, he rated? He's a rated 4 stars on ESPN. He's in the top 40. He's rated like 4 or 5 spots ahead of Caleb Glenn. But for me, he's the most unknown because I haven't watched him. I've seen tape of Reed Sheppard. Reed Sheppard,
he's the real deal.
Reed Sheppard is a clone of his dad with a better shot, in my opinion, coming out of high school.
He's the real deal.
Caleb Glenn, we both just talked about him. But George Washington, to me, he's a 6'2", 165-pound guard that Louisville's in great shape with. They had him on a visit already.
What are his strengths? What does he do? So, what does he do well?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's something that I have to look more into. I know he has visited, but he's the most unknown of the guys from the state of Kentucky for me. I just know that Louisville has. He also has a younger brother that's apparently an eighth grader that's supposed to be maybe even better than him. So that's something I just think as far as going into the future. That's three guys that when you really. If you want to look at, that's the three guys you need to look at is Caleb Glenn, Reed Sheppard, and George Washington as your top three guys. Another two guys, Laurent Rice is a guy that Mac has kind of keyed in on.
I like him. I saw him play in Louisville during the pandemic. Him and a bunch of guys came to the Focus Gym and just kind of played some pickup games. And he's tough. He's long. I kind of saw him as a two, but they said he plays the point. He had an Ohio State offer and a Dayton offer, but he's about 6'3", combo point guard. He can bounce. I mean, he'll dunk on you if he has to. He can shoot the three with range. He's got some talent, man.
Yeah, Mac has really keyed in on him. Louisville just offered him actually on the 15th of June. And then another guy, which is just a funny nickname. His name is Gus Yaldin. They call him Gus Bus. 6'8", about 240. I've heard he's a sleeper, but, you know, I don't know that much about him. I've actually heard he's actually shorter than 6'8", which to me, with you wanting to move your offense to a running, you know, an offense that's going to get out and run, I feel like you need to go after guys that are like Malik Williams' stature or something like that, some guys that are going to be able to get out and run, not somebody that's, you know, 6'6", 6'7", 240 and can't really get up and down the floor as well.
I have a question for you. Do you think – with Woodson getting the job at IU, does it put pressure on Louisville? IU's 2 hours away. If Woodson turns the program around, IU becomes a top 10, top 20 program, they will recruit the same players. I know for a fact they already have. Yeah. Caleb Glenn has an IU offer.
Yeah, he just visited her.
Right. Do you think that puts pressure on Mac? Because let's be honest, there's always been that Lexington's an hour and a half away. They're recruiting the same players, the best team in the state. Now you look at IU, if they emerge as a top team and they recruit the same guys as Louisville, especially in the region, the top guys in Kentucky, the top guys in Indiana, does that put pressure on Mac?
Absolutely.
If IU does well?
Absolutely, because I think you would agree with what I'm about to say. Louisville and Kentucky are going after the same guys, which you just said, because we're not going after the top five guys like Jalen Duran that Kentucky's going after. We may offer those guys, and it'd be dumb not to offer them, but – more often than not, we're getting those second-tier guys, the fringe five, high four, very high three-star guys. And that's the same thing that Indiana's doing. And now Louisville has had a lot more success with that, whereas
Patino has had success with that. Patino could take a three-star guy or a guy not ranked. And then, I mean, you got to think, Peyton Steven was a McDonald's All-American, but Russ Smith wasn't a 4 or 5-star guy.
2-star guy, yeah.
You know, you got to think of guys like Luke Hancock and some of those guys. Those guys were not All-Americans. And you take guys like them and, you know, Russ Smith becomes one of the best defensive players in college basketball history. Luke Hancock gets the MVP of the Final Four. And you take guys like Montrezl Harrell, who was ranked 85 to 90 on some rankings.
Gordie Zhang.
Yeah, and these guys are not 4-star, 5-star guys. They're 3-star guys. And you take those guys, now they become pros. They win championships and make Final Four with these guys. And that was kind of Patino's thing. And I think he's kind of that same category as Izzo is, hey, give me a guy who can play a little bit, who has the passion, and I can make him into a player. Because, you know, you take guys like Calipari, he gets the elite of the elite.
Yeah.
You know, he gets the Anthony Davises and, you know, Michael Kidd Gilchrist, and you get guys like Booker and Jamal Murray. There's not a lot of development you need. You just need to coach those guys, you know, handle the egos. But Louisville has a history of, give me a guy who's not the one and done, and we develop him into a player, and we win with those guys. Larry O'Bannon, guys like that. And can Coach Mac do that? Sometimes you need a 4-star, 5-star, All-American, or pro, because they're going to get you at a higher level. But if you get a guy who's not that guy, can you develop him and make him into an elite player? And that's what I think he has to prove is, can he take a guy who has some size or talent and some skill and then coach him up, develop him into a higher level player?
Let me ask you a question here, because you played under Crum and Pitino. Mm-hmm. What was the biggest difference as far as intensity goes from the practices in those two? Again, you played the last year.
It was night and day. And I really want to tread lightly here because I love Coach Crum. Like
I do too. I do
He's
too.
One That's of the most four or five influential men ever in my life, including my father. So the opportunity he gave me, I never want to step on any toes or say anything that would hurt him. But it was night and day. I think I got Coach Crum at the end of his career. Yeah, he was less passionate. He was ready to retire. But it was night and day. I think the emphasis on preparation, the scouting, how hard practice was, the attention to detail, it was night and day. Coach Pitino, I mean, he worked so hard. His staff worked very hard. I mean, the guy, he told me one time, Coach Pitino was like, I sleep 3 or 4 hours a night. He goes, he's always thinking basketball. You're always trying to get the edge. And if you sleep too much or if you relax too much, there's another coach who out-coaches you or gets a player you're supposed to get, or they win a game that you're supposed to win, or you're competing against these guys, so you can't sleep. You're always thinking basketball. What can I do to get better? What can I do to make my players better? So Coach Pitino just had that fire and he had that hunger, and, you know, you had to get it practice at this time, and we were doing two-a-days, and the intensity of practice, you really can't compare it. But I also want to be careful, because if I had played in the 80s for Coach Crum, then I might have seen a younger, more fiery, more hungry Coach Crum. So, it was night and day. It's not probably fair to compare the two, but Coach Pitino's style of coaching and the intensity and how hard practices were, I just really can't compare.
Well, see, the reason I bring that up is because I think you're one of the prime examples of a guy that was coming in. You came in as a walk-on, unranked. And you played your way into the rotation and even started games. So, I mean, I think you are a prime example of what you're actually talking about with Pitino bringing in guys, getting the most out of those guys, and then turning them into the best player that they can be. Because I'll speak for you, because I'm sure you don't want to sound arrogant or anything. You were a fantastic player, and you did big things when you were playing. And I think, obviously, number one, credit goes to yourself for working that hard. But number two, I mean, you would have to give credit to Coach Pitino for pulling that out of you.
He did that, man, with a lot of guys. You know, even you go back and look at Jamal McGlure and Nazi Muhammad, guys who were overweight. And he had guys lose 100 pounds. And Ellis Miles lost 60 pounds. And you look at guys like Taquan Dean, who was, I don't know, was Taquan like a three-star? He ends up being all Big East and making all freshman team. And Francisco Garcia was a 6'7", 160-pound freshman. 6'7", 160. He adds 20 pounds to the guy. He becomes freshman of the year in Conference USA. And then you got guys like Larry O'Bannon, I mean, who by his senior year, you know, almost made the Dallas Mavericks. Coach Pitino is great, one of the greatest, I would probably say, with Izzo in terms of player development. And I don't want to take anything away from Coach K, but he gets such high-level guys. How much development really takes place? But you look at a guy like Russ Smith, who Coach Pitino was trying to make transfer. He was pushing Russ out. Russ, this isn't for you. This level's too big for you. A year later, Russ is, the leading scorer. He's one of the best players that U of L's ever had. And he became a ball hawk and a guy who could put the ball in the hole. And Coach Pitino's just really good at getting more out of guys than probably what they have.
So we spoke earlier on David Johnson and Carly Jones, but I really want to kind of go in depth of, you know, them moving into the NBA draft. David Johnson and Carlique both were invited to the combine in Chicago. Now, David had a pretty decent showing. He had the second largest standing reach of any guard, which is big for a guy his size, because he's only about 6'3". I think they measured him 6'2.5" with just socks on.
David Johnson, I thought he was about 6'4".
See, 6'4 with shoes, but they measured him with just socks, and he was at 6'2", like 6'2¾", 6'2½". So that, but he has a 6'10 wingspan, which is insane for a guy his size. He's a freak athletically, but Sam Williamson goes, he's not very consistent when it comes to shooting. He shot,
you know,
He shot 21%, I think, from the three-point line his freshman year, which a lot of that had to do with his shoulder injury. But I think for him to really, really make a big splash at the next level, I think he has to get a consistent jump shot.
Here's the thing about David Johnson. I think he made a mistake going pro. When you go pro, let's look at your last 10 games. You want to go when the iron's hot. The iron was not hot for him. He did not finish strong. Does he have the athleticism? Yes. Does he have a good body? Yes. Does he have the potential? Yes. But is he ready right now to play in the NBA? In my opinion, no. You don't want to get caught on a team as the 11th and 12th man and sit. And then finally, you get bumped to the G League. You get caught in between. And next thing you know, you're overseas playing for, you know, a smaller paycheck. You want to get in when the iron's hot, when your name is hot, when you can be a first round and get that guaranteed contract. And then you're playing for that second contract where that big money can come in. A guy like David Johnson, knowing what you know now, late July, mid-July, hey, there's a name, image, and likeness part of college basketball. Come back. You don't, you know, if you're hungry to get the money, make $50,000, $100,000. There's people right now who would endorse him, do some deals. And I think, you know, if he surrounds himself around the right people, he can get some deals, make some money. There's no rush to go pro. Now you can get paid in college, develop your game. He needs to work on the jump shot. I still think he's got to get his body in better shape. He's still got some thickness and maybe some little, you know, he still needs some muscle tone and muscle definition and work on the body, work on the jump shot, get more consistent. And now you become a top 20 pick. Before the season started, Jay Billis had said he was a top 15 pick potentially.
Yeah.
The NBA scouts loved him. If you look at every mock draft, he's late second round or undrafted. He played himself out of a lottery.
So
he played so inconsistent. Now some mock drafts don't even have him on it. David Johnson, come back. Work on your game. There's money to be made. You can make $40,000 or $50,000 this year. Maybe more. I don't know. We'll see what happens. You know, there's some money to be made. And then you go pro. You get that lottery money, 3 years guaranteed. Now you got a $3, $4 million deal. Play your way into your second contract. You're set for life.
So going off of what you just said, The Athletic came out with their – pre-draft rankings. David Johnson comes in at number 53. So that's not very good. Just I'm not going to read the entire thing, but just read it. Just like you just said, Johnson had lottery buzz at the start of the season, the heels off on the heels of a pretty interesting freshman season where he put up huge per minute stats with massive turnover rates and horrific shooting splits. Now, the part that stuck out to me the most on this, because it's a three paragraph thing, it says defensively Johnson wasn't good. Watching him on tape, I was shocked how heavy his feet seemed. Louisville would try to hide him on threes and fours, and he'd get beat off the dribble even while giving considerable cushion. That's not a good thing for somebody to be saying, especially at this point of it. If this is at the beginning of the pre-draft process where he still has a chance to pull his name out of the draft, this is totally different because he can still pull his name out of the draft. And if the offense goes the way that it's supposed to go, this is the perfect offense for David Johnson to look the best that he can. You're going to get out and run. You're going to be able to show your athleticism. Your shots are going to be more open because if you are taking jump shots, they're most of the time going to be in transition or a secondary break, which you know just well as I do, that's going to be a lot more open.
Well, Beef, let me say this, and I want to say this and not hurt Carleek. Carleek coming to Louisville really hurt David. When David was at the point, it was different. Carleek came in and moved David to the two, and he struggled. David actually was better. DJ was better at the one. He did not play the two well, and it didn't. He's better with the ball in his hands than playing off the ball. Doesn't really shoot it well enough to be a real two guard. He's going to be a one at the next level, maybe the combo and play a little off the ball. But David's upsize was being a 6'3", 6'4", athletic point guard, right? Yeah. But he played off the ball, and his stats went down. Now that Carleek is gone, I think you come back, fight for that one position, or prove it, that you can be a legit pro, because right now you played yourself out of the lottery, out of the first round. I don't think there's any team in the NBA that's going to draft him in the first round. No. In the second round, there's no guarantees. Now you're fighting and hoping, fingers crossed, that you play well enough. And the NBA is the top 400, top 450 guys in the world. So now you're competing for one of those 450 spots. Now I just think that's tough. I think you come back next year, you average 17, 18 a game, you hit open shots. You answer those questions that scouts want to see. Can you consistently make shots? Can you have consecutive good games? Can you move your feet on defense and contain
down the turnovers?
Right. cut down the turnovers and increase your turnover to assist ratio or assist to turnover ratio. And now, boom, you're a 13th pick. Boom, you're the 9th pick. And I think that was, I think that could have been a potential for him. But what happens is everybody wants to go pro early because you're trying to get to the bag. You're trying to get to that $1 million contract. But now with the name, image, and likeness, NIL, you don't need the $1 million contract right now because you can make six figures in college. Have fun, enjoy the college process, make some money, keep it yourself, give it to mom and dad, help support the family. You can buy a car, you can start saving and investing now. And then when you're ready, now you go pro and you get the bigger contract and live your childhood dream.
So speaking on Carleek, we won't touch too much on it because you've already kind of told your side on what you think about Carleek. I think we both respect Carleek. We think he's a fantastic college player. We think he could maybe – I won't speak for you. I think he could maybe play a lesser or poor man's Cameron Payne. I think he could come in and give spot minutes in certain spots. I think his shot was a lot better than what it actually showed last year because he played so many minutes. And at the end of the season, he was worn down going through two COVID pauses and all that stuff. I think everyone's kind of shooting outside shooting percentage was a little bit skewed. I think he's a, I think it's a niche guy that it's going to be tough for him to make an NBA roster with his size, his age. I mean, I think he could have come back as well. I mean, either one of them could have come back and been fine. I mean, you're already looking at, you're already too old anyway.
I do not think Carleek can improve his stock.
When exactly. That's what I'm saying. He should just come back.
What could he have done better? He can improve his stock. Could he play better than what he played last year? No. He was really as good as he was going to be in college.
Yeah.
Outside of them winning or making a run in the tournament, he was as efficient and as good as he was going to be at the college level. I do think he made the right decision in going pro. He's probably never going to be a first-round draft pick unless he's more athletic or bigger. He's never going to be a top 10, top 20 pick. At the end of the day, Carleek's going to be a late second round or go undrafted and have to go through the whole tryout for a team, G League, and work his way up. Can he be a team's third guard? Yes. Can he be a team's Mike James or a guy who – Campazzo from Denver Nuggets?
Yeah,
he could be a guy who, and you got to think if Jamal Murray's healthy, he starts. Campazzo's a sub. Could he be a guy like that who's your third guard off the bench, comes in and plays 12, 15 minutes a game and just gives you a good 6 points, four assists, two steals? He could be that guy. He's good enough to be that guy. I do think he can have a career in the NBA as a role player. I do not think he'll ever be a starter or a star, but he could be some team's third guard.
I think the summer is going to be big for both of these guys. The summer league, you know, Vegas, Orlando, all that stuff. It's going to be a big time for both of these guys, especially Carleek, because Carleek's got to show that, you know, all right, yeah, I'm undersized, yeah, but I mean, I'm a competitor. I can get buckets.
What is he on paper? Is he 6 foot, 6'1"? What is he?
I haven't seen his exact measurements, but I would say he's 6 foot, 6'1", something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's. I guess it's not terrible with the way the game's going now because the game is looking for more outside shooting, but he's still going to have to be able to guard. If you're going to be a third guard, you're going to have to be able to guard. And again, maybe that was because he was so worn down last year. I didn't think he was a fantastic defender. I don't think he was terrible by any means, but I mean, he didn't really set himself apart as being a defender.
I can agree with that.
So you were just speaking on the name, image, likeness things and, going into, you know, David coming back, if he would have come back, he could have done that. I think it's about time. You and I have had the conversations, I believe, in the past about how we both thought that college athletes should get paid anyway. And I'm glad that this is finally set in stone. They're able to do it. Social media has been kind of crazy. Twitter's been crazy seeing these athletes doing these ads and stuff. And it's kind of cool, though, seeing Sam Williamson doing an Instagram video of him eating Royals. I thought that was kind of funny. But – I think it's awesome. I want to ask a question to you, though. I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this question. I want you to think back to college Bryant. Name, image, likeness comes in. What is the first thing that you would have tried to do as far as name, image, likeness? What would you have tried to put your name on?
I don't think guys like me would get to pick.
Well, see, I want you to say you were a household name, but with your mindset that you had, what would you have picked?
Well, that's the thing. I don't think a guy like me could have picked. I'm not a household name. I'm not an All-American. I'm not ranked high enough. Who knows? There was no social media. I think I would someone would have to approach me. Guys like me don't get to pick. In my era, I tell you the guys who would have made the money. Rhys Gaines and Luke Whitehead. Those guys would have made all the money. Rhys Gaines was a Naismith Award candidate. He was an All-American. He was 6'6". He was good looking. Rhys was tough. You know, he didn't have any tattoos. He didn't have anything that I think. Rhys had a great image, man. He had this clean cut image. He was a fan favorite and he could play. And then you got to think guys like Luke Whitehead. I mean, the girls loved him. He had the braids. He could jump a little bit. You know, he had this swag about him. I think those guys would have made a killing. And I think those guys, if anybody could have made some good money, it would have been Rhys Gaines and Luke Whitehead. But I think a guy like me, I couldn't have picked. I think, you know, someone would have offered me something and I would have had few options and I could have maybe capitalized on that. But the guys who would get to pick, who have a plethora of options, would have been Rhys and Luke. And they could have strategically said no to this, yes to this, no to that. But a guy like me, I wouldn't have had options, no.
As far as basketball goes, because I think we would both agree on who the person that would benefit the most in Louisville history and sports history from Louisville, who would
benefit. Lamar Jackson.
Absolutely. Like, I can't believe Lamar that question keeps getting posed. If you have to go basketball, though, who do you think would be the biggest beneficiary of the NIL if they had it during their time period?
Of all time?
Of all time in Louisville basketball history.
Well, let's be honest. Daryl Griffith and guys, you know, like him, or maybe Wes Unseld, Daryl Griffith, they're Milt Wagner, maybe. They're the most famous Louisville basketball players of all time. But that was an era of no social media.
Yeah.
I think, and you know, I'm going to throw this name out there, but I tell you who probably would have been the biggest guy based off personality and ability. T. Will. I think T. Will in basketball would have killed it, man. He was just kind of at the brink of like Facebook and some social media. He could jump out the gym. You know, T. Will one time compared himself to Elvis. He said, I was Elvis at Louisville. And I was like, man, with his personality, you know, he drove that car and had his name on the back of the car. And then he had a Lexus at one time. And he was friends with Nate Robinson and those guys. I think he could have made a lot of money. I look at a guy like Russ Smith.
That's who I was going to say.
Russ Smith at the last year when he became Russ Diculous, because at one time he was Russ Smith, but by the end he was Russ Diculous and he was a fan favorite. And I think Russ could have made a killing, man.
Another guy that could have as well is Kevin Ware, with the stuff that happened with him
man.
Kevin Ware.
He was one of the most famous basketball. I mean, yeah. He was on Jimmy Kimmel and all those shows. So yeah, Kevin Ware could have done great. Absolutely. But don't forget, man, T. Will was big at one time. T. Will was big. He was our most athletic guy in years. He was a lottery pick to the Nets. But I think he could have been big. I think Russ would have been big. But I think guys like that could have made a killing.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to skip over this entire NIL talk because I want to get your opinion on it. So what? All right, you hear the NIL is finally getting set in stone. What were your initial thoughts?
Man, there's a part of you that's like, damn, I wish that was around when I was playing. And then there's a part of you that's like, about damn time. Like, it's about time that they figured out a way to make this make sense, because the NCAA is competing. You don't want your top guys to go pro early. You don't want them to skip college and go to the G League. And it's been a thing where it's a multi-billion-dollar business where all of these people are making money on kids. And I hear people say, well, they get a scholarship. When I was in college, man, we would borrow money to get Taco Bell. We would scrounge up money. And I remember me and Francisco Garcia and some of those guys, he was my roommate my junior year, he was a freshman. We would put together $20 and go get Sonic or try to go get Taco Bell late at night. So when I tell you that we lived in Betty Johnson, they take out your scholarship monies between $800 and $1,000 a month. They deduct your living expenses and then you get a check at the end of the month. So once you deduct our living expenses for living in Betty Johnson, it was like $300, $280 a month you get. Man, that goes in the first day. You go to the mall, you go out to eat, or you put some groceries in your dorm, it's over.
Yeah.
So that scholarship, you know, some of these schools, it's $10,000, $7,000, $12,000 a year to go to school there. And then you got to think some of these guys, I mean, they're selling tickets. They're selling out stadiums. These football players, these basketball players, they're selling out arenas. Is that really a fair trade? These coaches are making $2-4 million a year. A low-level assistant coach at a high-major D1 makes $150,000 to $200,000 a year. And then here's a kid with a $10,000 scholarship. You give him a room and board, and then he gets $200 a month at the end of the month. Like, is that really fair? So I thought it was awesome. I think that we have to figure this out. I think there's a lot of questions that are going to be answered because this is brand new. Louisville's an Adidas school. What if a player wants to do an endorsement with Nike? Can you do that? I think there's a lot of questions that are going to be answered. You know, what if someone says, hey, there's a local pawn shop or a strip club or a cash, you know, a check cashing place that wants to endorse me? You know, is that going to be ethical or unethical? There's a lot of things we're going to have to figure out in this name, image, and likeness. I also think that people are going to be in for a rude awakening. I think that all these athletes are going to think, I'm going to be a millionaire. I'm going to make a lot of money. But I think it's going to be harder than what people think. I think it's going to be a small percentage of people who can really make money in this NIL market. You know, having a really clean image and a social media, you know, if you're on there flipping the bird and throwing gang signs and you got alcohol and weed and different things in your social media, I think there's a lot of businesses that aren't going to deal with you. So yeah. I think this is going to be a new era of educating these young people on, hey, don't post pictures of you intoxicated or inebriated. You know, you don't post pictures of you doing something stupid on social media, using certain language or racial language or any kind of racial slurs. Or, you know, some of this stuff has come back to haunt these young men and women. So I think there's going to be a lot of educating young people on how to make yourself more endorsable, how to market yourself better, having a clean image, you know, doing and saying the right things in public. And I also think it's more regional than what people think. How many people are really a national household name? You got Zion Williamson, you got Lamar Jackson, you got Trevor Lawrence. A lot of these people are going to be more regional. Yeah. You know, what are you in your state? What are you in a 30-mile radius, 60-mile radius? Some of these people are charging $250 an hour to make a guest appearance. Some of these people are going to do basketball lessons. Or let's say there's a tennis player who wants to hold their own camp or give tennis lessons. Everyone won't get rich off the name, image, and likeness. I think a lot of these people, can you make an extra $2,000 a month? Can you make an extra $4,000 or $5,000 a month? Can you maybe only make an extra $5,000 a year? And that's better than nothing. But I think overall, there's a lot of people out there who think they're going to get rich in this market or in this time with the NIL. And I think they're going to be deceived and disappointed because everybody can't do this. I think it's going to be a small percentage of athletes who can really make big money in this market.
Yeah, to the people that want to go against it, I want to give you guys an example. So Kyrie Irving, he went 1 year at Duke. The average tuition at Duke is about $57,000 a year. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's his scholarship right there for 1 year. He quadrupled that in the amount of money that he brought into the university at around $2.5 million of money he brought into the university.
How did they prove that? How do they know that?
Jersey sales going off of, you know, ticket sales and all that stuff. Because if you remember, he only played in 11 games. Mm-hmm. But his jersey was the top-selling jersey on Duke's team that year still.
That's awesome.
And that team was fantastic. So you look at somebody like Kyrie Irving who – would have done humongous things in college. He goes on to be the number one pick for Cleveland. And you think, man, just think if that guy would have been able to put his name, image, and likeness on something and, you know, gone out and endorse something in Durham somewhere. And I agree with you. These guys are going to have to find their certain thing. The biggest example of someone doing the best is Jordan Watkins for the football team. He's putting his name on everything. He's like, look, I don't care if it pays me a whole lot. I've seen him do four or five different ads for something. Even if it's $200-$300 here or there, but four things, that's over $1,000 in just four different ads. And maybe dude, you're doing I'm telling two, 3 minutes.
When I played, Luke and Reese would have made a killing, man. Oh, they would have did very well. They were good looking guys who had good images and the fans loved them and they could play. And I think that's the next market. Look at the girl. Look at the female gymnastic. I think her name's like Olivia Dunn or whatnot from LSU. She's not even an all-conference. She's not an all-American. She has over a million followers on Instagram. She's, you know, a cute little blonde chick, and all the guys like all of her pictures, and girls want to be like her. They think she's pretty as well. You know, someone forecasted that she could make $1 million this year. You don't have to be the best athlete. I think there's going to be a market for really attractive, good-looking people who can pull in that social media market. You know, they have different algorithms that say, hey, you have a million followers for every post, 200,000 people view your post. So if you take a picture with an energy drink or a soda or whatever product, 200,000 people are going to see our product. So that equates to a certain value every time you make a post. So I think those people are going to have a market. So the people with great social media presence, Mikey Williams and people like that. Then I think there's that elite athlete, the Baker Mayfields, Johnny Manziel, you know, the Zion Williamsons, the John Morants, those people who could be household names and everyone in America knows who they are, they're going to have a market. But then I think there's going to be that small market for that kid or that girl who can host a basketball camp, give a private lesson, go to a local car dealership, sign autographs, or get in a radio and or, you know, I think there's a small market for people who can make a couple grand a month.
I think that's huge. I think the person that's going to benefit the most from this is not a male athlete at all. It's Haley Van Lith. Haley Van Lith has the most followers of any athlete almost in college sports. She has over, she was, you know, friends with Kobe Bryant and his daughter, dates Jalen Suggs. I mean, she's going
she can
to
make, they forecasted that she could make over $1 million this year. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, so I agree with you. It's about time. But again, I want to make sure you understand this question. So let's say you were in Reese's shoes. I just want you to get in your mindset of what did Bryant like when he was in college. If you were in Reese's shoes and you could pick, what would you have picked for the first thing that you would want to endorse?
I would pick a product that pays me back in terms of, let's say there's a clothing store and I want to shop there and I want to wear their clothes. Oh. So now I get a monetary gain and I get to go into the store and wear their clothes. Or there's a shoe store. Finish Line, Champion, whatever it is. Now I get free shoes. Or do I endorse for a car dealership and now every 3 months I get a new car? I'm driving a new Lexus, a BMW, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's the win-win. So not only do you write me a check, but now I get to use your product freely. You know, what if someone, you know, T-Mobile or Verizon, now I'm getting new phones. I don't have a cell phone bill. I'm getting free shoes. I'm getting the car. I think that's the new thing is, not only do I get monetary gain and you put cash in my pocket, you're writing me a check, but now I'm also getting your product for free.
That's, yeah, there you go. All right, so.
But a car would make sense. So to answer your question, man, hook me up with a car dealership. Let me drive a new car. I mean, what 18, 19, 20-year-old college kid wouldn't want the Beamer or the Lexus or whatnot?
Yeah, because not only are you getting the new car, then you're getting the girls too.
Exactly. Man. That's where it's at. You pull up in the nice ride, man, it all makes sense.
So. Since the last time we spoke, as far as on the podcast, your training has gone higher, gotten better and better. You've been training the entire time that we've known each other. But I got a couple questions for you. So what age groups do you actually train, or is there a limit?
I do a beginner basketball group that is pretty much first grade and up. So it's kind of kids who've never touched a basketball or young kids who play, but they're just smaller and younger. So that's pretty much 6 to 11. I do that on Saturdays, and that's, you know, I've had kids at 5, 6, 7. We lower the goal to 9 foot. So when you're talking new to basketball, can't dribble, learning how to dribble, I've worked with kids that young. So I'm getting them from the earliest stages of kindergarten, first grade.
So you get a kid that comes in there and has not really done anything as far as basketball goes. What's the main thing that you're focused on? I guess just making sure that it's fun so that they'll want to come back and improve more, or? What is it exactly that you're working
on? Basketball should be fun. I think sometimes that, it's going to be a job in college, and it's obviously a job if you play pro ball. It shouldn't feel like a job for elementary kids. It needs to be fun. But I tell people all the time, there's a lot of great trainers in the city. There's a lot of great trainers in this area. If you're not challenged, if you're not sweating, if they're not pushing you, it's not a good training. I tell people all the time, you don't have to go to me. Get the training, get the extra attention, but it should be difficult. You should be challenged. You should be pushed. You know, I hear stories of people going to trainings and they're not sweating, or they're doing drills they already know how to do, or the trainer isn't pushing them to go harder or go faster. That's not a good training. So I pride myself that I'm going to push your kid. I'm going to challenge your kid. I always believe in coaching kids up. So even when I get younger kids, I'm challenging them to do drills that they don't want to do. Two ball dribbling, switching hands. You know, I had a first, second grader that said they couldn't dribble between their legs. Well, here you're going to go behind the back. You're going to go between the legs. You're going to learn new stuff. I always believe in coaching up.
So do you do camps as well, or is it just strictly?
I do camps. In camps, you know, here's the interesting thing about camps. Camps are good money makers because you get a lot of kids in the gym at one time. They pay a fee and you might get 20, 30, 40 kids. But, you know, I really pride myself in my group sessions. I have small group sessions. We really get after each other. And that's different than a camp. Like, camp is more fun and you're doing camp drills and camp stuff, but I do daily trainings, you know, which also is a big part financially for me in terms of training. But that's where a lot of the real work comes in, is the small group trainings. You're coming in with four or five kids. You get four or five breaks in an hour. That's it. And we are pushing each other. We're doing ball handling, shooting, one-on-one, passing, scenario drills, all of the above, agility, speed, vertical training. It's kind of a buffet of training all in one. And that's where you're really going to get the growth.
So what would you say is the most difficult age group to train?
It's always kids who are new to the sport. When you're trying to teach kids just to dribble with their head up, or you got a kid who can't dribble with their left hand, they take two dribbles and the ball dies. That's always the most difficult. When I do really young kids, I hire help. I got a couple people in the community I trust. I bring them in. You know, we try to have a two or three kid to one staff ratio. You don't want to get 10 or 11 kids in by yourself who are young. You get overwhelmed and you get all of your attention to that kid who's really struggling or behind. So you want to have good staff. But that young age group, man, that's always going to be the toughest. You know, when you get that 5, 6, 7-year-old kid who their attention span's short, or they just don't really understand how to dribble or how to move or how to play the game.
So what would you say is the most fun age group to train?
Man, it's always when I get former pros or college guys or elite high school guys. I mean, I don't just do drills. I don't believe in just dribbling around cones or dribbling around chairs. We do one-on-one or some interaction every day. And when you get to see high-level guys scrimmage or go one-on-one, two-on-two, and you get to push them, it's really fun to watch. It doesn't feel like work. You really just get to watch high-level athletes compete, and that, for me, is my favorite.
You still get out there and play with them sometimes?
No, man, those days are over. I'm 39 now. About 3 years ago, I could mix it up and compete. But now at this stage, man, I don't want to get hurt, and I can't do the things I used to do. So I don't enjoy competing if I can't compete at a higher level. So for me, I try to avoid jumping in. If there's an odd number, I have before, but I really just enjoy being the trainer.
I mean, I'm sure you jump in there and like show, maybe like give an example of how the drill is supposed to be run or something like that. Oh, it's totally different.
Demonstrate. Yeah. I believe a trainer should be able to demonstrate. You know, if there's a trainer out there who can't and he just tells you what to do, there's something wrong with that. I think if you're going to train the game and teach people, you should still be able to do the dribbling move or shoot a jump shot with correct form. A trainer should still be able to get in there and say, look, you have to be able to do this, this, or this. I mean, I can still dunk a basketball. I can't compete at a high level or play Division I basketball right now, but I can still demonstrate my drills. Absolutely.
So who is somebody that this is a two-part question. So who is somebody that maybe you look to, or like who are you studying to kind of get different examples as far as like training goes? And then what kind of got you into training?
I started training by accident. My son was playing in the first, second grade YMCA basketball, and he had a coach who didn't really know what he was doing. And at halftime, the coach would just take one basketball and they would shoot, and the kids would all get bunched up in the paint and the ball would come off and they would just fight for the ball, and whoever got the rebound could take the next shot. And I said, Brandon, we're not doing that. Come over here with me. And we did ball handling drills for the whole entire halftime, 3, 4, 5 minutes. A dad came up to me and said, man, what would you charge me to do that with my kid? I didn't know. I said, I don't know. Let's talk about it. So then we would go and I would start working with the kid, and grew from two kids to three to four or five. I started renting facilities. And I used to think that if the training wasn't really, really, really hard, it was a bad training. So I would push the kids so hard, they would throw up, they would almost pass out, they would quit in the middle of the training, because I thought if it's not really hard, it's not a good training. And that was probably from me playing for Patino. So then I kind of learned how to pace the trainings. It can't be all this and none of this, and kind of having a variation, coaching guys up, working with lower level kids and high level kids in the same training. And through the years, I've really started to just figure it out. But I'll tell you what, as a trainer, you got to grow. If you think you know everything and that all only your drills make sense and only your way of doing it, then you're going to really, really mess kids up, or you're going to lose a lot of clients. So what I do is I have a couple trainers that I study and follow from all over the country. And I just kind of, and a good trainer, I tell people all the time, this isn't my drill. This is something I did at UofL, or I did in high school, or I learned from another coach, or this trainer does it, or Chris Paul or Stephen Curry does this drill, D'Angelo Russell. And then I take it and I give it back to my kids. So there's guys right now in Louisville, there's guys in Virginia, there's guys all over the country that I follow. I'll see something on their social media, I'll study it, I'll YouTube it, and then I come back and then I give it to my kids. And that's what I do sometimes in my spare time is I just watch videos and I'm like, what can I do to make my trainings better? What can I do to make my kids better?
So this is the last question for you. And it's a question that I wondered because I know that, like you said, you just figured this out. I mean, your son is going to be a senior this year, correct? So you just figured this out 10 years ago at the longest. Is training going to be what you think you're going to retire doing, or is it just something that you're doing now because it pays the bills and you do that?
Well, first of all, I've made more money training than I've ever done anything. You know, I've been a teacher. I've done all different kinds of jobs in my life, but I've made more money doing this than I ever thought I would make doing a lot of things. So I've been blessed and I enjoy doing it. 5-10 years from now, I would see myself pivoting somewhere else. I really would like to get into sales. I would really like to get back into a traditional work where I'm investing and, you know, I have a great insurance plan for my family, things of that nature. But for right now, I love what I do. I make my own schedule. I work when I want to work. I work with the people I want to work with. You know, if I ever get clients or people I don't want to work with, I cannot work with them. I answer to me and only me. I don't have a boss. The gym that I use, the church that I use is great. So right now I'm enjoying that. But 5 to 10 years from now, I would think I would probably at some point probably pivot. And I would love to get into sales, whether it be medical sales or whatnot.
So what, first off, where can they find you? How can people get in contact with you?
I'm on social media, Instagram. You can find me at Northern Bryant. Facebook is Bryant Northern. I have a gym in Jeffersonville, Indiana. I train probably about 348 to 350 out of 365 days. I'm going into my fourth year as a full-time trainer. So I do camps, I do individual, I do groups, all for different packages. I do low level, mid level, and high level kids. So I have experience in all three different levels. But I'm here. You know, if people want to train with me, if people want to work and get better, if your kid doesn't know anything about basketball, you can bring them to me. If your kid is figuring it out and they're somewhere in the middle, I can help them get better. If your kid's a high level kid, and you just want to fine tune, kind of like an oil change or just a tune up. You got a game the next day and you just want to get shots up, or your kid struggles with ball handling, but they're good at this. I can help them in all aspects, shooting, ball handling, defense, technique. So I'd like to consider myself as a coach or a trainer who can help players in all aspects.
All right, series is 2-1. Who are you taking in the finals?
I like the Suns, man. I liked the Bucks at the beginning of the playoffs. I thought this was a year that a team from the East would win it, and I thought it was going to be the Nets or the Bucks. But now that I've really kind of watched how things have transpired, I think the Bucks are done. I don't even know if they'll win another game. I think Phoenix wins, go up 3-1, and then I think they go back to Phoenix and close out.
Do you want to know the current score?
Tell me right now, because are the Bucks winning?
Tied up at halftime, 52-52.
And you know what? I think Phoenix will probably win in a close game. That'll make them 3-1. And then I think at the end of the day, man, they close in Phoenix in the next game.
So you said that way, if Phoenix wins today, they're going to finish it out the next game. Bucks win here. Does that lead them to win the series, or you still think Phoenix wins?
No, because at the end of the day, that means that they would have had to win 4 of the next 6 games. I just think Phoenix is too good for that. I think the Bucks' offensive scoring is too inconsistent. Middleton's hot one night, then he's off. Jrue Holiday has been inconsistent. You can't rely on P.J. Tucker for points. Brooke Lopez has had 2 strong offensive games in the entire playoffs. Outside of that, he's not a scorer. And I think the guys at Phoenix have proven consistently that they have 4 or 5 guys that can all put the ball in the hole and give you 18 to 20 on any given night. And I don't think the Bucks have proven that. Although they were one of the highest scoring teams in the regular season, in the playoffs, man, they've been really easy to guard. It's been 1 or 2 guys who can give you buckets. And I think that's Middleton and Giannis. And Giannis still can't make a free throw. He still can't hit a jump shot. Holiday's had a good game here or there. Lopez had a 30-point game the other night. But I think consistently those guys haven't proven that they can have 2 or 3 good games in a row, and Phoenix has. So I give the edge to Phoenix.
I said at the beginning of the series, I'm not going to change it. I said Bucks in 7. So I can't go against what I said. They still have a chance to do that. It's tied up in this game. But man. I appreciate you coming on. I want to ask
you this. Do you think the Bucks were better without Giannis? They looked really good the two or three games he was out. Do you think in a weird way they're better without him?
No. Because if you think about them in this series, think about how bad they would lose in this series if they didn't have him. Think of what game two, when they ended up losing, Giannis had 40 and no one else showed up. He has more 40-point games in the finals than Kareem, Kobe, KD, and Steph Curry.
Well, I'm going to tell you this.
First finals.
Last year, they were going to get swept by Miami. Mm-hmm. He went out and the Bucks won a game. Chris Middleton stepped up. And it seemed like the ball moved more. I think he's so ball dominant that the offense drastically changes when he plays. It's everything is ran through him, and he can't consistently make a jumper. He's a drive, 5 feet and in, 10 feet and in guy. He makes them easy to guard, and he takes touches away from other players. When he was actually out, I thought they looked better. So in a weird way, you get more scoring, more opportunities. The ball moves more. And all four, all five guys are now more of a threat than when he's on the floor. So, in my opinion, I actually think they've played better without him.
I mean, it's
– and he gets 40 points, so that's deceiving. One would say, well, Brian, he had 40 points. But what did he miss? Two games in the last series against Atlanta?
Two or three, something like it, yeah.
I think they won two of the three without him. Yeah. So, I think – I mean, it looked like the series was moving towards Atlanta winning the series. Giannis goes out and Bucks come back on the back of Lopez and Holiday, who got more touches and became a more focal point of the offense. And they were actually looked better without Giannis.
Well, let's go back one more series before that. Do you think they beat Brooklyn without Giannis?
No, I do not.
Yeah,
but I'll tell you what, with or without Giannis, if Brooklyn's healthy, I think they win the whole thing.
Absolutely. I agree. I agree 1,000%.
Brooklyn Nets is the NBA champions. And then you look at the Lakers, who, if they're healthy, beat Phoenix. And then you look at if Kawhi Leonard doesn't go out, do they beat Phoenix? It's been an intriguing playoffs in terms of injuries.
And that's what's kind of tough for me to give. And I mean, I guess I can't really say it. It's kind of tough for me to give Phoenix credit because of that. But you play who comes to you. I can't. It's not their fault that people have gotten hurt.
Golden State beat Cleveland with no Kyrie and Kevin Love. I mean, LeBron was playing with Dellavedova. No Kevin Love, no Kyrie. We gave Golden State all the credit in the world, and then Golden State was losing to the Spurs. Zaza Pachulia steps under Kawhi Leonard. Yeah. Kawhi Leonard rolls his ankle, and then they win the series, win the NBA championship. So injuries happen. Yeah. Golden State has benefited from it
twice. You see my picture back here? I don't have a Golden State picture. I got the LeBron Black picture. For a reason. I said exactly what you just said about Cleveland or about Golden State. That first season, when LeBron came back and Love and Kyrie go down, I mean, that series, I mean, they were arguing that he could win finals MVP on a losing team. It would have been the second time it ever happened. That's how
great for him, because it's probably the best finals performance we have ever seen. Yeah. And we're going to forget about it. People, unless you're a LeBron fan, people do not talk about the 40-point games. He had one game where they lost, and, I mean, he was as good as Jordan or anybody I'd ever seen. He had, like, 40 and, like, 10 and 12. I mean, he was just unbelievable, and they lost. It may have been the game that J.R. Smith could have taken the last shot, and he dribbled the clock out because he thought they were up.
Well, that was actually in his last year in Cleveland. LeBron,
like you said, and I can't remember specifically. I'd have to have something in front of me to kind of refer to. But he was as good as any player we had ever seen, and they lost that series, and I kind of felt bad for him.
Yeah, it was kind of discouraging hearing reading what he said yesterday, though, that he wants to finish his career in L.A. because I'm not an L.A. guy.
Isn't there a part of you who wants to see guys stay in a franchise? I mean, all this franchise. Look at CP3. I like CP3. I'm excited to see him win. But the dude's been on like five teams in the last like 5 or 6 years. Sometimes you just want to see a guy stick.
But to be fair, though, how many teams – I actually despise Chris Paul, but I'll actually play devil's advocate on Herb. He's been traded every time he's left. Mm-hmm. Other than New Orleans, when he went from New Orleans to the Clippers, he signed with the Clippers. But he's really only signed with one team because he got traded. He was going to get traded to the Lakers. That guy
Nicks. Is he forcing the organization to trade?
His
agent might make a phone call and say, hey, man, we want out. Let's move my guy. So I don't know, but –
He didn't force him to trade to OKC. I'll tell you that. He did not want to go play in OKC.
What will his legacy be? I mean, he's been with the Rockets. He's been with OKC. He's been with New Orleans.
I'm the last person you want to ask that because I don't like Chris Paul at all. I think Chris Paul is a very dirty player. I don't want Phoenix to win strictly because he's on their team. I think he's a fantastic player, but I can't stand him.
What did he say to Patrick Beverley to get Patrick Beverley to shove him like that?
See, people say he didn't say anything. He definitely said something to him. You can see him mouth something. I don't know what he said. It was probably, you know, something I'm busting your behind or whatever, but not in a less nicer term. And it just set Patrick Beverley off because of the timing of it, them getting blown out and the series was over. You knew it was over. But it was probably something to that extent, or even, you know, thinking back to the 2016 finals when the LeBron and Draymond Green thing happened and LeBron said that he called him, you know, the B word, and that's not something you call another grown man. Maybe it was that. I don't think he obviously only said one thing, but it set Patrick Beverley off, which, to be honest with you, nothing. It doesn't take very much to set Patrick Beverley off.
Yeah. I don't know what your thing is with CP3. I kind of want to see him win, but there's a part of me, being an old Bulls fan, I want to see a team from the East win. But the Bucks have been hard for me to root for, man. At this stage, I'm just rooting for the Suns. So we're opposite on the coin on this one.
He's fantastic. He's an all-time great point guard. I'm not going to cheer for a guy that punches multiple guys in the groin, though, intentionally. I can't do that. I can't get behind
that. He's got that old Grayson Allen in him.
Hey, it's worse. I mean, you think back to him hitting Julius Hodge when he was in college.
Worse than Grayson Allen? Come on. Worse than Grayson?
I want to send you a picture or a video of him and punching Julius Hodge when he was at Wake Forest. He's done it multiple times in the NBA. I don't like Chris Paul. I think he's fantastic as a player.
Dennis Rodman said John Stockton was the dirtiest player he ever played against.
I have heard that. Yeah.
So, people said that Larry Bird was the best or the biggest trash talker ever. So, I think some of this stuff, I will not remember Chris Paul as a dirty player. I think dirty players, I think of Rodman's and, you know, Ron Artest and guys like that. But at the end of the day, you know, send me the video. I'd like to see it. You might change my mind.
One more time. Tell everybody where they can find you, how they can get in contact with you so they can get their kid in training.
Instagram, it's Northern Bryant. Facebook is Bryant Northern. I'm located in Jeffersonville at First Christian Church. You can reach me on any of my social media platforms. I post stuff about trainings and camps all the time. I have room for new clients, individual and groups, or if you just want to come to camps during the summer or anytime there's no school, Columbus Day, Martin Luther King Day, Christmas break, fall break, spring break, I'm always hosting camps for the kids, 1-day camps, 3-day camps. So get in contact.
Any days of the week you don't train?
I'm a 6 or 7 day a week guy, even if it's only for an hour or two. So people can find me. I like to work and stay in the gym as much as possible.
All right, brother. Well, I appreciate you taking time out, man. You got the new kid, so I'm gonna let you get back to being a family man and get ready to get some rest for tomorrow.
Hey, I appreciate you, Beef, so much for having me on. I'll be in contact with you soon, buddy. Thank you.
Absolutely, brother. Later.